Hello, I'm Astrid.
And I'm Sophie. This is Not By Accident, a documentary podcast series about choosing to become a single mother and coping with being one. If this is the first time you're listening, I recommend you go back and start at episode 1. This is episode 9, this strange period. Hey, sorry to interrupt, I know you're probably getting a lot of calls. Okay, and she's all right? All right, so it's probably not today still. Yeah, which is possible, but yeah. Anything's possible. Cool. It's very exciting. It's such a weird thing, the feeling of, you wait and you're looking forward to it, and at the same time you're dreading it. It's horrible, and it's so strange, isn't it? Childbirth.
My brother's baby is due this week. There have been some false starts, and I'm feeling jumpy every time the phone rings. He doesn't have time to talk, so I sit down with my sister Charlotte for a not-so-quiet chat.
Every time I think about the fact that this new little baby's about to be born, I feel so emotional.
Aww.
I just can't wait to hold that little baby. But I'm also kind of... I can't believe we're about to go away. We're going away on Tuesday.
So you're going to hopefully be here. You might not be.
I know. It didn't dawn on me until after I booked that she might not be born yet. Corners on me. You went through it the first time. Like, is this labour? Not yet. God, what a nightmare. Just not knowing. Is it going to be today? Do I have to drop everything today, or should I keep trying to work so that I'm ready?
I actually left work a month before my due date. Had fully completed my handover. Got rid of all my emails. Totally under control. And then I actually had this amazing month. It was one of the best months I can remember in my life, because there was nothing that I had to do. And, read lots of books and...
That's perfect. That's how the inner pregnancy should be.
You're still thinking about the logistics of what you would have been going through. It wouldn't have been.
Oh, it was such a stressful time, because I'd just got back and I was probably still jet-lagged. One of my great fears had been, what if I'd gone into labour, like, either on the flight or in Korea when I was there for that one night in Seoul?
Oh, I know.
And I managed to find only one of one insurance company that was willing to insure a woman as pregnant as I was. I was very relieved when the plane touched down on Australian soil. I thought, okay, I can go into labour now, it's going to be all right.
I was what they call a geriatric mother, which is...
really, really, really flattering.
Really old. I was a geriatric... I think geriatric mother means you're over 30, and I was 41 when Alex was born.
Does it mean you're over 30? That's almost all mothers these days.
It might be 35. Anyway, I was very much a geriatric, and having had an emergency cesarean with Sebastian...
There wasn't much choice
about it. I could have still had a go, but it was
not recommended.
Not real. Well, there were more risks involved. And, it was pretty unpleasant going through 23 hours of labour and then having to have an emergency cesarean as well. It was sort of like the worst of both worlds.
But,
I want to play here.
No, you can't play here.
Morning.
We're just doing a bit of work. Do you see that? That's a microphone. And Sophie's recording our conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And we're talking about when you were a little baby.
You were a little baby and you used to sleep on my tummy. And I had Astrid in my tummy, and you used to sleep on top of Astrid, like this, over my huge belly.
You did.
Yeah, I liked
that. It was really nice. I liked it too. Well, you can still sleep on it if you want.
Do you want to lie on Sophie's tummy now?
No.
Later.
Alexandra and I spend many hours on the couch together. Him draped over my pregnant belly, so content, often sleeping. It feels like the most natural thing. Little cousins reacting to each other's movements. Hardly anything separates them. It also calms me.
There was this strange period, wasn't there, where there were three of us in hospital in the space of 4 weeks.
That's the period that this episode's about.
I thought that once I was home, I could start to focus on getting everything ready for your birth. But as it turns out, this period is not to be all about you and me.
Yes, so I woke up in the middle of the night when Alex was a few weeks old. He might have been 7 weeks old. And my tummy was really sore, rumbling, and I thought, oh no. It reminded me of when I got appendicitis and had to go and have my appendix out. And then it got worse and worse to the point where it was so extreme that I thought something is seriously wrong. I need to go to hospital. You know, you know the difference. And I said to Victor, I have to go to hospital. Mm. Anyway, it was right up there. Gallstones, childbirth and root canal. They said to me that having had them once, it was likely going to happen again. And so I should go and be booked in to have my gallbladder out, which was a bit of a nightmare. I mean, if you want to go and have surgery and have all the medications that you have to have when you have surgery, when you're breastfeeding a little tiny baby. Mm. Anyway, so I booked in, and that's when the doctor and I sort of said, well, I can't go that week. That's when Sophie's baby's going to be born and there's too much going on. And they said, well, when you get, you book into a surgeon, you just have to go when you can get in.
So you were booked in, I think you were booked in for about 3 days after my due date.
I'm a bit quiet and noisy.
Right. You're a bit quiet and noisy.
I've noticed that she can be quiet and noisy.
Mum.
Yes, sweetie. Okay, but you have to let me talk to Charlotte.
Okay.
Just okay?
It's like a comedy, isn't it?
Hey, don't you growl at Astrid. That's very naughty, Amy.
Yeah, she's like, sorry. Oh, sorry.
I just come here.
You can sit very quietly and read a book.
I'll read the book too.
Ellie. Just the thought of, you know, I've missed your baby's birth.
Yeah, that was a shame.
I felt really sad about it. I think you did too.
Yeah, I did. I wasn't really worried about surgery for me because it was very minor surgery. It was really super duper inconvenient.
Yeah.
But it wasn't...
Didn't upset you, the breastfeeding thing? You had to pump, which is maybe the first time you've really had to pump.
Oh, no, I pumped like crazy with both of them from the start.
From the start, did you?
Yeah, pretty much.
No, Alex. I don't want to.
So it was good. I had plenty of milk pumped and ready.
Right.
And I know this is not really the way the story's supposed to go, but in some ways it was really nice. I had this really peaceful sort of 24 hours
that must have been
in hospital where I got to sleep really well.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I just got some yucky smells in me.
Okay, I have to go and see.
What kind of bass is that?
No.
Sorry. What's the matter?
Charlotte's gallstones are a horrible thing to have to deal with, but it's our father who becomes the real worry as 2013 begins.
I could tell something wasn't quite right and you hesitated to pick up my bags. And then I remembered that you'd said you were getting over a virus.
Well, I think I was fine, but it was the fact that Rebecca's apartment was up on the top floor
third
of the building,
floor.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, but they were heavy, but I think, you weren't fine.
No, I wasn't. That's true.
You realised that something was seriously wrong when you were at the coast?
Yeah, we went down for New Year's Eve to stay with the Hansons at Gorilla Bay and they had some other people staying.
That's right.
And I wasn't feeling terribly well, but I went for a walk on New Year's Eve out to the headland. But by that night, I was really feeling pretty bad. And I think I excused myself and went up to bed at about 10 o'clock while everyone else was still partying on. And the next morning, I was pretty bad and looking very jaundiced. Well, I didn't quite know what to do. I rang Nouriel Williams, a friend of ours, who's a GP in Canberra. We thought, after talking about it, that I probably needed to see a gastroenterologist. And she told me that she had been using for some time Jonathan Bromley, who's married to the daughter of my former partner in legal practice.
Yeah.
Got onto Cole. And Cole said, Jonathan and Heidi are in a rented beach house down at Mossy Point. And within half an hour, I was around there.
And Jonathan was able to access his blood test results from before Christmas and find out there was a problem. and find him a doctor in Sydney to do an endoscopy. So it all happened incredibly quickly on New Year's Day.
And miraculous to have anything like that happen, because doctors are all away on holidays.
Yeah, totally. But they just happened to be in holidays in the same place.
Mm.
And he was just so lucky to know this doctor, yeah, who's a specialist, who, yeah, was, like, happy to help him. Mm. I mean, most people don't have that kind of,
no,
luck.
Within a few days, we were on our way to Sydney to Westmead Hospital, and it was actually when I think a member of the nursing staff mentioned something about cancer, something about oncology, and I naively said, "Oh no, that's not me. That must be someone else."
I've just come back from talking to my dad about his cancer, and it stirred up a lot of feelings. I'd forgotten some of the timing. I'd forgotten that he first saw the doctor and knew that something was very wrong on New Year's Day, about a week after I got home. I was still jet-lagged, and my emotions were already running high just with leaving Denmark and coming home and my baby being so close to arriving. And, you know, my life was changing so dramatically at that point. And I feel like this is too much. I'm already overwhelmed with the feelings that I'm having. I've been through all this with my mum, and I'm so lucky she's survived, and I so want my dad to be a part of my baby's life.
I was lucky because this, what turned out to be cancer of the ampulla, had expanded the ampulla, which is normally the size of perhaps a pea or a marble, to about the size of a golf ball, and blocked the common bile duct.
Which gave you symptoms.
Gave me symptoms.
Because if it hadn't been there...
If it had been in the pancreas, for example...
You wouldn't have had any symptoms.
No, I wouldn't have had any symptoms for a long time, probably until it was too late to do too much about it.
So it was just because of the placement.
I was just so extraordinarily fortunate, I really was. The advice from the professor at Westmead was that I needed to have surgery. I didn't need to have surgery within a matter of days, but I certainly needed to have it within a matter of weeks.
Gosh, imagine if you had to wait to even find out about it until the end of January.
Yes,
which is what most people would have had to do.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely right.
They still thought that he needed to have this major surgical procedure called the Whipple procedure, and I googled it to find out about it. Someone told him to. I can't remember who it was. So I googled it and read about how long it takes and how much of a risk it is. The other thing that was very scary was this page on Google talked about famous people who had the Whipple procedure, and they were Steve Jobs, Luciano Pavarotti, and I can't remember who else, a few other people, all of whom were dead,
yeah,
within 2 years of having the operation.
Yeah. But the reason for that is most people's tumours don't create immediate symptoms, yes, so they're not found as early.
That's right.
I go to meet my midwife, the first of several visits, and I have another scan.
Sophie, hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Really good. We need to try and do a scan to see where this placenta is sitting, so we know for sure.
Yeah.
Sit there for 1 second.
Okay, sure.
I'll do that, and then I'll do all the other things.
Yeah.
I got the place in the program that I'd hoped for, and a bed reserved at Canberra Hospital. My mother comes with me for the first appointment. I decided I'd like her to be at the birth, and she agreed. I didn't really want anyone I know to see me in that state, but I certainly didn't want to go through it alone. So this is what we decided. She comes with me to the first birth class too. Walking into the room full of couples, a lesbian couple and the rest heterosexual, is strangely intimidating. People seem to stare, and I hear one couple snigger and whisper about us. This is the only time I can think of where I've been made to feel self-conscious about being a single mother. The room is hot, crowded, and descriptions of all the things that might go wrong go on for hours.
It gets better in future weeks, but I have to admit I am tempted after that first evening not to go back. I make the important baby purchases and get the bedroom ready. I decide to buy a car to maintain some independence, having moved back into my mother's house. She's very generous and I have plenty of space, but it's still an adjustment after living alone for so long. For her too. I spend some time in Sydney and catch up with all my friends. Lucy is over from the US and we meet for coffee. It's rather strange, but nice. As we say goodbye, I try to wake you so she can feel you moving. I turn 39. Cass and I have a joint birthday party in a beer garden. It's great and makes me feel like I still have a bit of a life, but I'm not as agile as I try to convince myself I am. The intense heat is hard to cope with. I look at my legs one afternoon and they've swollen so much that they're unrecognisable. It scares me. I decide it's time to go home, slow down, and settle into the air-conditioned comfort of my mother's house for the final weeks. There's a dark shadow over everything as my dad's surgery looms.
There were two youngish Canberra gastrointestinal surgeons who were exceptionally good and as good as anybody in Australia.
So lucky to be able to be at home and do it.
Mm. I was under the anaesthetic for something like 7 hours with two surgeons, one on either side of me, working for that time. Each of them had done Whipple procedures on their own and they decided that it would be more efficient to do it together and I was their guinea pig.
It involves taking out... Lots of your major organs,
well,
doesn't it?
Well, they remove a very substantial part of your gastrointestinal system.
The surgery was on the 1st of February, so it was 2 weeks before my due date. And they said that he'd probably be in hospital for 2 weeks after that. I remember that day of the surgery. I had trouble getting out of bed. I was so scared because it was such major surgery. And I'd read a little bit online about how this surgery didn't always work for people. Once they open them up, they find that the cancer's already spread and it's too late. So it was very good news when he woke up and they told him, it doesn't look like it spread. It looks like we found it early.
I remember going and visiting you most days.
Mm.
And it was sort of heat wave weather in Canberra.
That's right, it was. It was a bit summer.
It was just boiling hot.
Yes.
And I was 9 months pregnant.
Right. Yes.
Eight and a half months pregnant.
Yes.
And people would comment as I came into the hospital, well, you're in the right place at least, just in case anything happens.
That's right.
And one day I turned up and my shorts and T-shirt were almost identical to your pyjamas.
Yes,
do you remember,
I remember that? I do.
I was so happy that I was home.
Yes, well, it was wonderful that you were here, that I had all my family were here in Canberra at that time, weren't they?
It's so hard to deal with something like that when you're there and you're part of it. But when
yes.
you're away, you really feel powerless. And
yes, absolutely.
In other circumstances, I wouldn't have been home. I wouldn't have been able to be there and see him. So I felt very lucky that I was home, that the timing just happened to be right then. But I just felt like these are too many big life-changing things to be dealing with all at once. And I was imagining taking my baby from my hospital to his hospital to go and introduce them for the first time. My father is released from hospital and Valentine's Day, my due date, comes and goes. I'm relieved. I'd imagined your future misery on dateless birthdays, all your coupled friends unavailable for parties as they have their romantic dinners. If your love life turns out to be anything like mine, I hope it doesn't, by the way. I hope you have many Valentine's days filled with romance and love. My dad was really concerned about his work and all the people that were counting on him. I could relate to that.
I was approaching retirement, due to turn 70 in May, 3 months later. And I had a lot of reserved judgments, cases I'd heard but hadn't yet decided. And this meant that I had to stay on until I finished my judgments and deliver them one by one as I finished them, which took a long time. I really thought well, I actually thought to myself, if I die, there are going to be a lot of cases that are going to have to be reheard, many days in court with counsel on both sides at great expense to the parties, and it would just be very unfair to so many people. I mustn't let that happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's horrible to have to... But I guess that's what we do in life, isn't it? Think about how our own situation is going to affect the people that we're working with or for, as well as our families. Astrid was due on the 14th of February.
Yes,
so
yes.
It was all...
It all happened very suddenly, and it wasn't... Well, things like that don't ever happen at a good time, I suppose.
But there were just such heightened emotions because it was all of those life and death things colliding.
Yes,
at exactly the same time.
Yes, that's absolutely
which
true.
Meant there was, you know, stuff to feel positive and optimistic about, but it was so... It was so traumatic.
You certainly realise that friends are important, very important, but family's even more important.
I can't believe you had that going on at the same time as, you know, you were about to give birth for the first time and worrying about him and having him having that operation. It was a very, very scary time. I don't know if I've told you this. His doctor, one of the two surgeons, is... the father of one of Sebastian's school friends.
Yeah, I know. You didn't know them yet at that point, did you?
We just met them around that time, yeah. Anyway, I ran into him at soccer the other day, and he said, "How's your father?" And I said, "He's great. As healthy as anyone else I know in his age group and still working in his on-call career." And he just shook his head like this, and I said, "What?" And he said, "It's just amazing." He said, "He's my biggest success story." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I just can't believe that he recovered so well." He said, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
And I think
I'm glad they didn't tell us that.
I know.
Back then.
I was really surprised. I sort of, because to me, it just seemed, I'm the Pollyanna. I always think everything's going to end well.
Mm.
Everyone's always going to live happily ever after.
I'm either the realist or the pessimist.
Yes, that's right. So you probably frustrate me. I mean, I probably frustrate you. Yeah. Well, probably both. Actually.
Well, I just think you're not being realistic.
Whereas
he is as well. He's like you.
Yeah.
He always thinks, everything's going
to
be...
Yeah. So to me, it seemed like this is fantastic. They found this little tiny cancer. They got rid of it. He had this scary big operation, but he got through that. And now everything will be fine. But if his surgeon is surprised that he's still alive 3 years later, then perhaps I underplayed it somewhat in my mind.
Yes. My the way I played it in my mind was closer to his assessment.
Yeah.
But I just was so... I mean, when Daddy decided he was going to have the chemo, I was really relieved. And I thought, I think he's going to live to know his new grandchildren, which was just, I mean, of course, I didn't want to lose him for us, but
no.
But I so wanted them to know him. I guess the first 6 months of Astrid's life, you were having chemo.
Yes, yeah. And still under pressure to finish my judgments in the course of that, and I'd be, you know, back at work in the afternoon after I'd had chemotherapy in the morning.
Yeah. You now have the time to go and see the dinosaurs in the Botanic Gardens.
Oh, yes, I know. It's wonderful. On a weekday.
On a weekday.
It's a big dinosaur.
I'm going to pet him.
Yeah, you can pet him.
I do that sometimes.
What about these ones? Yeah, do you want to go and cuddle one? You can. You can if you want.
Imagine that. How different that period would have been if you'd been overseas. You wouldn't have been able to. You would have come back. So if it hadn't been for the Astrid thing, you would have come back.
You would have. I definitely, by the end of it, I don't know when, but I probably would have resigned and come back.
I think you would have. It was very hard having to leave at Christmas and partway through the year, but maybe you would have been coming back a few weeks later
maybe.
Anyway and not have had the opportunity to plan for it.
Yeah, maybe.
Because that's what happened to me when I came back from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Diana, the similar scenario, but with our mother. And just packing my life up and getting on a plane and coming back.
For a terrible reason. And I, yes, yeah. I was leaving for a great reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Which you had chosen and worked towards.
Yeah.
So, and then the net result being that we were all together for what was a very tough period, but also an exciting period.
Such a strange mix, because it was so, I mean, one of the most exciting periods in our lives at the same time as being so utterly devastating.
I try to relax and wait for the big day. I am calm to begin with. It's too hot to go outside during the day. Braxton Hicks, the practice contractions become stronger and more regular. My mother cooks and packs up meals for herself for the birth and keeps having to eat them and start again as the days pass. I suddenly feel so uncomfortable, so enormous, so ready for you to come out. Charlotte goes in for her surgery. I get more and more anxious. 4 days over, 5, 6. I go to the movies one day as a distraction. People look frightened when they see me, like they might be about to witness something horrific. I start acupuncture to help you along. Friends call for updates. The midwife says they won't induce me until I'm 2 weeks over. After 5 days, my practice contractions are regular. I can't remember exactly, but something like a minute long every 5 minutes all day. They don't hurt, though. I spend a lot of time Googling trying to find out how you know if it's a real contraction. Somewhere I read that if you can talk through it, you haven't started yet. So I try to distract myself with cable TV. I become obsessed with shows about birth and hospitals, like One Born Every Minute, Call the Midwife, and 24 Hours in A&E. This may not be healthy. The anxiety over what the birth might be like, all the things I can't plan for, the waiting, it all challenges my mental stamina. On day 6, the whole family visits Charlotte in hospital. I feel like a whale. I decide this will be my last outing. You can come now, Astrid. I'm ready.
I'll put you on speaker, Nick.
Hello?
Astrid, Nick's got some news.
Hello.
Hi, Astrid. We've had a little baby girl.
This is an independent production made by me, Sophie Harper. Thank you to all the people in my life, especially this time to David, Charlotte and Astrid Harper, for letting me share your stories and for your endless support.
Now that she's here, I feel like I'm not... Why was I so scared of her coming?
Were you? I'm glad you feel...
Yeah.
Why?
Oh, because of the hell of looking after two young children. That everybody talks about.
It's in some ways it's so much easier with the second one because you know how to do everything. It is hard because there are twice as many of them.
Hard, but there'll be just, you know, twice as many good moments as well, won't there? I mean, all of those, all the joy you get.
Yeah.
From the, we get so much joy from Vicky every day.
She's calm and beautiful. She does look like you there, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
That could be a bit of David Harper there, too.
I think that we've said that about all the
babies. He must have like a baby face.
She's got my hairline.
Yeah. Well, it's also...
Yeah. Oh, she didn't like
that. Oh,
no.
No.
A huge, huge thanks to the 55 wonderful people who have donated to my fundraising campaign. If you'd like to join them, there's just 3 weeks left. Go to notbyaccident.net to find out more.
She's asleep, so we'll just be really quiet.
So
cool.
Because she's asleep.
You know where I know where I make her
up? Just have a look how beautiful she is.
Because
she's
beautiful little face.
She makes you seem a very big girl.
Music by Dexter Britton and Chris Zabriskie.
Your cousin Astrid. You can be like a big sister to her.
Yes.
We're home from our wonderful trip to New York. I'll tell you all about it another time. I underestimated the jet lag, which delayed this episode.
Wow, look at those!
But we're back on track.
It's noisy, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, there's another.
In the next episode, in 2 weeks, birth.
Goodbye, everyone.